From ACB Radio Mainstream, welcome to Tuesday Topics. For the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to blind and visually impaired people. And now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Hi, this is Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida, and welcome to Tuesday Topics. Let me begin by thanking our producer and this evening, in fact, our guest as well, Mr. Brian Charlson, for his participation in the program, and our editor and recorder extraordinaire, Mr. Steve Bauer. And also, of course, we would like to express our appreciation to George Byes of Talking Communities, without whose software we would not be doing this program. Well, tonight, Brian Charlson is our guest. Any of you who saw the announcement of today's presentation were probably salivating madly over the fact that Mr. Edwards made this huge faux pas in what he described GPS as standing for. Because tonight we are going to be discussing GPS, and it is my belief, though Mr. Charlson will be able to correct me, that GPS does in fact stand for Global Positioning System. And a Global Positioning System, put simply, is a system that utilizes satellite to help individuals figure out where they are and to figure out how to get from there to somewhere else. Assuming that that is correct, I think I'm going to ask Mr. Charlson to start off by telling us why blind people ought to care. GPS has traditionally been something that was used in cars, particularly fancy cars, to help them figure out how to get around. So why should blind people care about how motorists get around, Mr. Charlson?
I think to begin with, people need to understand that global positioning systems are dependent on a series of satellites in geosynchronous orbit over the Earth in such a way that multiple satellites have a view of the same place on the Earth at the same time. By triangulating their position relative to you and a receiver in your possession, they can determine where you are. More importantly, your receiver can determine where you are and compare your location with a map on the device that the receiver is attached to. And in this fashion, you can figure out within a very few feet where you're standing. Imagine now you stepped out of your front door as a blind person, and you've decided that you're going to go down to the local, let's say, Dunkin' Donuts. And you know that it's down a couple of blocks to your left, and then it's about three or four blocks to the right, and then you cross the street, and it's in this little mini mall area. So you know that our normal way of traveling as blind or visually impaired people is to carefully map out where we're going to go. It's not typically a casual saunter down the street, oh, so far, and then maybe over so far. It's not so much a landmark experience for you and I. So with GPS, we can indicate, before we even leave the house, after it first gets a fix as to where we are, where we want to go through a list of points of interest or specific address, ask it to define a walking, if you will, set of directions, descriptive direction from where you are to where you want to go, read them before you ever step out the door, and once you step out the door, choose to either turn the device on to monitor your progress or not turn it on to monitor your progress and simply rely on reading the direction as you go. This means that if you put it in the monitoring mode, you can begin walking the direction, general direction you want to go, and the device will correct you if you make a wrong turn, recalculate the directions to get where you want to go based on that last wrong turn, and give you progress as you move along. So it might say, next turn in 200 yards, next turn in 50 yards, next turn in 5 feet, turn right. And you turn right. In addition to those kinds of directions, also continuously can tell you where you're at. And we're talking, again, within about 9 meters or so. And that means that you can know what address you're standing in front of as you're walking along. Yes, initially, these were designed as navigational tools for high-end automobiles and for small planes and the like. But now that they've been adapted for use by blind and visually impaired people, a couple of fundamental changes took place. One is, rather than being based on road maps, that is where a car can turn and can't turn and how fast they might travel on a given road, and in fact, traveling on roads that cannot be walked along by a pedestrian, like the Massachusetts Turnpike, for example. Instead, they're designed around maps specifically for pedestrians. And then it gives us much more flexibility to get from point A to point B. So I would say that for a blind person who has access to technology, next to being able to access the internet for general information, this is another fundamental change that technology can make in our lives, making us more casual travelers as well as more adventurous travelers.
So does this mean we can give up our canes and guide dogs and just let ourselves wander along with an earphone in our ear?
By no means. It was my pleasure to be one of the trainers that went down to work with the CNI to help develop a process that they would feel comfortable with sharing with their students in how to use GPS with a guide dog. Certainly the devices are only good within a certain distance. Whether or not the rumor is true that the system is actually scrambled a bit to break up its accuracy for national security reasons, or whether it just happens to be affected by things like weather and tall buildings and other obstructions, I really do believe that GPS systems can simply have a bad hair day and not work as well as they did yesterday under virtually the same conditions. The fact of the matter is that they do not help you know when to step down or up a curb. They do not tell you about the neighbor having parked the car not all the way in the driveway, and so you have to swerve around it to continue down the sidewalk. They don't deal with cyclists and rollerbladers coming at you. They don't deal with the small obstructions of life. For that, you're going to definitely need to first and foremost be able to use effectively either the long white cane or a guide dog. I would say that it's a great augmentation to either of those two basic and essential skills.
Then let's put the shoe on the other foot for a moment. Does the use of an earphone in one's ear significantly impede one's ability to travel safely in the environment?
First off, you have several options in putting anything in your ear. One is it doesn't necessarily have to go in your ear. You do not have to use a headset. You can use an earphone. I use one called a surround ear, which actually doesn't fit in the ear, but rests outside the ear with the speaker unit pointed toward the ear canal. And it works quite well in not blocking my sense of, if you will, surround sound in my environment. You could also, and some of the systems provide this for you, put a small open air speaker on the shoulder strap of the PDA that your GPS is connected up to, so that you can actually hear it talking to you like a parrot on your shoulder, rather than something that's plugged into your ear so that nobody else can hear what you're hearing, no matter how close they might be. And I guess lastly, it has to do with how you adjust it. When I'm walking through a quiet neighborhood and strolling around to get to know that neighborhood, I might turn on those features of a GPS that tells me where I am each time I pass a new street address. But if I'm moving from point A to point B through an unfamiliar environment, and I'm really having to be on my toes about the nature of an intersection, those kinds of things, then I'll turn it down to only utilizing the feature that allows me to turn at the right time and to anticipate a turn in a reasonable length of time. So it doesn't have to be that kind of problem, but certainly it can be if you're not careful in your adjustments. Again, one of the things we were dealing with at the CNI is not giving a guide dog a false impression of how much you're paying attention to the signals the dog is giving you. For example, you might come up to a street, and the street you're walking along crossed by another street. As you stop there, you might say, "What's this street?" It didn't announce this street name to me. One of the reasons it might not announce the street you're about to cross is because all the houses face the street you're walking along. As a result, the GPS addresses are all based on the street you're walking along. So you might have to turn up the intersecting street, a house or two, in order for the GPS to say, "Oh, you're at thus and such address on thus and such a street. And then tell your dog to turn right around and head back to the street you were originally walking along. That can be quite confusing to the guide dog. After all, if they thought that they were guiding you, not this whispering voice in your ear. So you have to design a process, whether you're a cane user or a guide dog user, to utilize this talking device. And by the way, it doesn't have to necessarily be talking. If you have a refreshable braille device, a free hand, and are walking in decent weather so that you're not exposing it to the elements, you can use a refreshable braille device on your PDA with GPS and be able to get the information that way if the audio is a distraction to you.
Thank you, Brian. That's a little clearer now. One of the questions, I guess, that I would raise is, you indicate that GPSs that are made for the blind are generally no longer organized in such a way that they consider things from the perspective of the motorist, but that they instead consider things from the perspective of the pedestrian. I'm sort of surprised to hear that, and maybe you could amplify on that for a minute and then perhaps go on to add whether you believe that in fact we're going to see over time the emergence of even more blind-friendly kind of GPS information. And third, I guess I would add, how are we making a difference? Because my understanding is that we're actually buying map systems that are in fact designed for use for the most part by motorists.
Well, several things. First off, in fact, all of the GPS systems that I'm aware of have an ability to make an adjustment that would make them more pedestrian oriented or more automobile oriented. The one that does the least successful job of this, in my opinion, is the Street Talk product that can be added to your PacMate series from Freedom Scientific. It talks about quickest route versus shortest route. And the quickest route, generally speaking, is best for an automobile, while the shortest route is, generally speaking, best for a pedestrian. And occasionally it does make an error and refuse to allow you to turn the wrong way down a one-way street, even as a pedestrian. But the other two products, which would be the Trekker and the Sendero GPS system used on BrailleNote products, both of them are much more oriented to the pedestrian, but have the ability to flip a switch, utilize it while a passenger in the vehicle, and be able to utilize it more effectively to give directions to a driver, here in talking about things like keeping to the left or keeping to the right to be in the proper turn lane, etc., etc. So you certainly can use these GPS devices as a passenger in, say, a taxi or a family car to help direct the driver in the direction you'd like them to travel based on accurate data. So, yes, we do utilize in all of these systems mainstream mapping data. But that mainstream mapping data is not exclusively used by vehicles these days. I know the first ones were based on actually delivery systems by companies like UPS and the like, because they would have their drivers use GPS to get to all those places in such a short period of time. But those days are far behind us, and this data has been augmented immensely by additional data. And probably one of the ones I'm going to enjoy the most over time is the idea that the GPS can be synchronized with real-time data to allow you to avoid obstacles that are logged in to systems used by other kinds of users. Right now, for example, if you're in New York City and you're driving around and you're using the GPS of certain varieties, it will let you know where there's a traffic jam and give you alternate routes around those traffic jams. So it's not just going to take what the map told you you could do. It's going to alter those decisions based on current traffic conditions. The same kind of information is true, however, for things such as roads under construction, which would be of some concern to those who are pedestrians as well, since sidewalks can be torn up and those kinds of things as well. Or where there's some kind of emergency taking place and all traffic, pedestrian and vehicular, are being redirected around, say, a gas leak or something along those lines. So there's some real-time data being mixed into it that makes it more effective. one other kind of real-time data that's being mixed into these GPS units, and I'm not talking about the blindness ones now, I'm talking about all of them, and because there's a leakage effect, that is, that we benefit from what's happening in the mainstream. And that would be information about the businesses as you pass along. You might find that the GPS information can be augmented with information about what the hours of a business are, what the menus of a restaurant are, those kinds of pieces of information as you're walking along, stopping in front of a business, and ask for a bit more data.
We are getting relatively close to the point at which I'm going to open this up. But I want to get a few more pieces of vocabulary into our system, if I could, Mr. Brian. So let me begin by asking you to define one other component that I think many people who are blind regard as one of the more fun features of GPS systems, and tell us a little bit about how that would be used. And that is called, at least on the Sendero system that I'm most familiar with, the virtual mode. Could you tell us a little bit about what that is and what one would use it for?
Again, keeping in mind that all, by no means are these three systems that are the primary systems absolutely alike, either in their vocabulary or in their skill sets, if you will. Virtual mode allows you to place yourself while sitting in your living room or hotel room or wherever at a particular locale and then explore through the keyboard the neighborhood. So you might say, I would like to know I'd like to know everything within a X radius of where I am currently located or where I've told the system I want to use as my starting point. I'd like to know all of the points of interest in that area. And there's vast lists of these points of interest. So you might be able to say, where's there an ATM closest to this particular point? Where are there restaurants, and restaurants of what type? Where is there a health club or a public transit station, the police station, whatever, just an immense number of places that you can ask and filter down and say, I'm not interested in where all the golf courses are, so I'm not going to bother looking there. Instead, I would, however, like to know where all the public parks are in a given area. And then as you go through this listing of them, you can say, all right, I'd be interested in that. How do I get from where I have placed myself virtually and where this is? How far is it? How complicated is the walk? Can you give me a walking description, and I'll look through that and decide whether or not I want to go there. I do this quite a bit when I'm traveling and I'm stuck in a hotel someplace, and rather than eating hotel food for day after day, I'd like to get out and see what the neighborhood has to offer. So even before I leave, I'll place myself at that location, ask these kinds of questions of the GPS, and it gives me information. Now that's one type of virtual walking around. Those of us who looked at a device called the Strider in the early days of this whole concept of using a computer as a navigational device, remember saying, all right, I am here. Now I'm going to use my arrow keys to walk along this environment. And for every keystroke, it's as if I walked up one block that direction or walked up one block a different direction. And I can go walking around and exploring and asking things about the nature of the traffic patterns and the addresses and the like. So that type of virtual travel is also possible. And I'm not sure, quite honestly, which of the three systems currently does it in this fashion. It may, in fact, be the Sendero product that's capable of that and that you're referring to. One last thing I want to mention before we open the mics is that it's interesting that the old days, the original Strider was based on a desktop PC. You used it while you were there to the best of your ability, and then you tried to apply it in a cognitive map. You also then move that on to a more portable platform, that is the PDA, so that you could do what you could do with the Strider to some degree, and then you could take that information and go out on the road and actually allow it to track you as you did what you were intending to do, either in a strolling kind of mode where it's just telling you where you are, or actually mapping you and directing you from point A to point B. I'm excited about where the next step is likely to take us, and that is GPS by cellular phone rather than GPS by PDA.
We will open things in just a moment. I think I have one more question that I want to discuss with Brian, and it has to do with points of interest. I would also say that I am a Verizon user, and we're really one cell phone away from being able to use the GPS system that Verizon offers. And according to Verizon, anyway, I don't think anyone knows for sure whether we can rely on this information, but according to Verizon and some of their customer service folks, 6 months from now, they actually will have a phone available where the GPS system that they use will actually talk to some extent. But Verizon's approach to accessibility is interesting, to say the least. The one other question that I wanted to have you talk about for a moment, Brian, is something that I think is beginning to happen. I know it is to a degree with the Sendero system. I would hope that it is with others, and that is that individuals who are blind are actually able to add points of interest to their GPS systems themselves. And as those positions get added, they will usually contain a good deal more relevant information than a POI might otherwise take, and they may also be POIs that aren't at all on the road. I know one of the things that we've done on our college campus with some borrowed GPS systems is to actually map POIs for all 9 buildings on our campus so that were a student to have the same kind of GPS system, that student would actually be able to come onto campus and immediately be able to look up those POIs and use them. So could you talk a little bit about POIs, or points of interest, and what we're doing perhaps to create an encyclopedia of them that might be available to people who are GPS users and who are blind?
Well, two things. One, I want to keep in mind that this program is listened to internationally on ACB radio, and so I don't want to ignore the world of blind and visually impaired GPS users outside the United States. So I'm going to bring them into this conversation at this point. And that is that certainly points of interest can be established by the user of the device. All of the 3 major devices allow you to say, I want to stop right here, and I want to make this point a point of interest, and I want to describe why it's a point of interest to me. Sometimes this takes the form of text that you key into the device. Other times it can take the form of a voice note, so that whenever you arrive at that location, if you told it to indicate when you're at a point of interest as you're moving along, that it will automatically trigger that voice recording and tell you more information about it. It might be something as simple as, here's where the neighbor leaves the trash can out every Thursday. Or as complicated as, this is the bus stop for the 52 bus inbound. Any kind of information that might not be in the initial points of interest you can add. Now, some of the systems, and I think most strongly the Sendero product, has created such a great user group that they share these points of interest through the Sendero website. So an individual can carefully go out and map 2-3 dozen important transit stops in their city, then post those up so that anybody else who comes to that city can download and install those points of interest along with their own and make navigating that city even easier. And in fact, there are some places where the actual municipalities may keep the appropriate kinds of list of points of interest, and they can be incorporated in. I think, for example, my old hometown of Portland, Oregon, has their entire map of bus stops throughout the city available as a download and installable set of points of interest for those who are using the Sendero product. I hope that's what you're referring to, but I wanted to let you know that there's some other interesting experiments going on in Europe. Of course, any entity that has access to a Symbian phone have access to some form of cellular GPS already. There's an excellent description of one such thing and demonstration on the Blind Cool Tech podcast that's worth checking out. Also, in Scandinavia, there is a project underway where, in fact, blind people utilizing cellular phone GPS, when they find an obstacle out there, can actually do a verbal log of it so that any other blind person who may pass the same path can find those, sometimes not points of interest, but points of distress. And it's interesting where that might go. That is a GPS system with a significant amount of user-contributed data as part of the information that one can access. And I understand a similar kind of thing is being done in Italy, though the Italian experiment has much more to do with different entities entering GPS data into the phone system beyond that was part of the initial release. All an interesting idea, I think. But again, note that the European involvement is already in the direction of using cellular technology.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you're listening to Tuesday Topics. Once again, your host, Paul Edwards.
I think that we can probably open things up and see if folks have particularly some questions. Let's see if we can feed Brian some questions first and save the comments for a little while. So, folks who have questions for Brian, fire away.
Hello, Brian. This is Stanley in Augusta, Georgia. You keep mentioning the cellular technology, and I'm kind of curious. I mean, the cellular technology that's coming out with GPS, I'm assuming it is the phones themselves are not built with the GPS device, but it's using the cells somehow, or am I just completely off there? How is that technology actually done?
No, it is using the same global positioning satellites that we were describing earlier. It's utilizing the capability of the Bluetooth connection that one can make with a Symbian phone. So the phone can be capable of utilizing a GPS receiver. Sometimes the GPS receiver is literally in the phone. Sometimes the GPS receiver has to be paired to the phone as a Bluetooth device. But in one way or another, Bluetooth receiver that's part of or connected to the phone connects to the satellites, and it's using the cellular phone technology to access the database of points of interest. So the GPS receiver determines where you are, sends that information over the cellular phone system to a main database, which compares that information with a master database. So it's not actually holding all of the maps in the phone. Rather, they're available triangulated from your phone to a main service. And these services, by the way, all have a monthly fee to them. They're not something like our GPS systems where we buy them outright. Also, as a result of that, they're much less expensive as an initial buy-in.
Brian, just a couple of quick comments. The Verizon system appears to have a receiver built in to the phones itself, but they aren't necessarily all Symbian phones. I know mine is not a Symbian phone. And it is GPS capable. It just isn't accessible GPS capable at this point. And footnote 2, there are a very large number of cell phones who, even if they don't offer GPS systems because the phone's not capable of that, can be located using satellite technology so that in the event of a serious emergency, somebody could be gotten to. And that's really kind of exciting because it's one of the latent advantages of GPS technology that's being harnessed in cell phones, though not very widely used at this point.
I want to respond one more thing to it, and that is that, in fact, there is E911 available on cell phones so that they can actually locate where you are, they being police, fire, ambulance service, and the like. When you dial 911, they can determine where you're located. So they can triangulate your position in most parts of the country that have good cell service just with cellular signals. But those cellular signals are not used to triangulate your location, as I understand it, with any of the current GPS-based systems that we're referring to on cellular phone technology.
Brian, of the three manufacturers of cell phones, GPS, which one, like the one that you settled on, what makes this one the best one for you as far as you're concerned?
Good question. First off, let's back up and realize that two of the three systems are dependent that you already own a PDA, and a specific PDA. You either own a PacMate unit, whether it's the QX QWERTY keyboard version or the BX Braille keyboard version, either of these with or without a refreshable Braille device. And then you can add to it a Bluetooth compact flash card into the unit, a Bluetooth satellite receiver, which is about the size of, say, a box of matches or so, a little bigger than that, but not much, and it's rechargeable, and then a piece of software, or a collection of pieces of software, which collectively is called Street Talk. So if you're using a PacMate, you're going to get Street Talk. That is your only alternative as a PacMate user. A similar thing exists for Braille Note users. If you are a Voice Note or Braille Note or Braille Note PK user, the product that you have a choice of is one, and that is the Sendero product. The third product we've been talking about, the Trekker, again available from VisuAid, which is a division of HumanWare, the same people who make the Braille Note. You use a PDA. Right now I believe that they're using HP or Hewlett-Packard PDAs that have installed on them the GPS system. It has a much smaller keyboard. It's a true PDA, and therefore it's more the size of a television remote control than the other devices are. And it, again, has a Bluetooth receiver, and it's the only standalone product. Price-wise, the Street Talk runs in between $700 and $900, depending. The Sendero product, I believe, is in the... Well, I think we have somebody on here who actually works for HumanWare, directly or indirectly, and might be able to tell us what the current price of the Sendero product is. How about it, Rachel?
Okay, the Sendero is $15.99. That also includes your maps, the GPS receiver, and the program itself for the Braille Note, Voice Note, or PK. One correction I'll make, Brian, is that the PDA that's going out with the Trekker is the Dell Axum 5150 or 50. It's 51. I'm drawing a blank on the actual number, but it is a Dell Axum. And the one thing to remember also, it might be straying a bit from what you were saying, but I'll throw this point in as I know it's a concern of people using PDAs, is that the nice thing about that, the latest Dell that is being shipped with the Trekker, is that you don't lose any data. If the battery goes flat, you don't lose any of your data, which is really good to know if you're traveling a lot and, you know, maybe one night just happened to not charge your PDA and you find out the next day that you've lost all the data you put in 2 days earlier. With the Dell, you don't lose any of that. Now, you don't lose your maps in any case because they're on an SD card, but you don't have any fear of losing any data or anything that you would have put into the PDA itself.
Now, with respect to the PDA for the Trekker, I had heard that they had switched over to HP's because they were having problems with the Dells, especially at the power charger area of the unit. I think that our friend from Atlanta also had heard that, correct?
That is correct. It's Anisha from Atlanta. I do have a XM50, Dell 50, because I bought it some time ago. They went to the 51s afterwards, and my understanding is what Brian just said. They no longer use them. In fact, what I've heard is that Dell has discontinued that line of PDA. So I don't know if that's the case or not, but HumanWare is, in fact, selling the system with the HP model.
Okay, that one's news to me. It must have been pretty recent, so I'll have to look into that.
Now, I'm not sure whether to direct this question to Brian or to Rachel or to both, but I'll direct it to Brian and see what he does with it. One of the things that was said pretty loudly at the convention this summer was that both the Icon, and presumably that will apply to the Braille Plus as well, and the VoiceSense, really two of the newest products to arrive on the market, are expecting to be GPS capable relatively soon. Would either Brian or Rachel care to comment on that?
I'll step in for a quick moment, and that is both companies have indicated that that is in fact their near-term intent. Always when we're talking about what's going to be, we have the issue of defining how near is near time. I believe both companies intend it to be true within 12 months of the release of the product, but I don't think either company is willing to commit to that 12-month timeline.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Brian, on that. I know they certainly want to do that in order to keep up with the demands and desires of the community using their products. But they certainly have built into their grand future plan of expanding their products to include that. But there again, who knows what the time frame is.
Brian, this is Leroy. I have an iPack 6515, and it has a GPS built in it. And I've used it a little, but I've never really learned to use it well. But also, I have mobile speak on my iPack, and I got that from the Code Factory. And my iPack, that model, has very little memory, and it took up so much of my memory and slowed my iPack down so much that I finally just took it off. Now, I'm with Singular, and AT&T just announced that they're working with the Code Factory to get speech to go on their telephones for people who are visually impaired. I don't know if y'all heard anything about that or not.
Hi, this is Anisa from Atlanta. I am an AT&T wireless user also, and that's what I have heard. In fact, I have seen a press release from AT&T. You know, until now, Singular has been made talks available with their 6620, one of their old Symbian systems. And my understanding from that press release is that AT&T is now switching to mobile speak. And so hopefully we'll finally be able, those of us AT&T wireless users, will finally be able to upgrade our phones to a much more modern smartphone type that can use the use of a mobile speak.
Brian, also, I wanted to tell you that I use a hands-free Motorola 700. And as you know, I wear a hearing aid, and it hooks around my ear and sits right on top of my hearing aid. And I do most of my talking on it, unless I'm reading a book. And I read all my books with my iPack, and I have a headset that is also a Motorola. That's an 800. And when I'm listening to a book and I get a phone call, it switches the book off, and I answer my phone. And when I get off my phone, it automatically goes back and turns my book on at the place I left off. So I use it quite a bit.
Boy, you are wired for sound, my friend. That's excellent. I would say people who are looking at a future in GPS, I'll make myself very unpopular among my friends who sell these products, but if I weren't desperately in need of a GPS system as we speak, if I could literally hold off for 6 months to a year before making that leap, my guess is that you're going to be very happy with the changes that occur, both in terms of the price and the portability and the flexibility of these systems. The fact of the matter is that many, many sighted people are trying to use GPS in a eyes busy, hands busy situation, and that shouts out for using speech and voice recognition more effectively to interact with them. And I expect we're going to see a real burst in the use of them in that fashion. And that, again, speaks well to the future of using cellular phone technology to access GPS information. One other thing that I think is interesting about the whole idea of GPS, and we haven't said that, a major limitation is its line of sight. That is, you need to be out where at least 3, preferably 6 or more, satellites can be used by your receiver to determine your location. You step into a building where there is no line of sight, and you're instantly without USID or GPS, have no access to that GPS, not in a real-time scenario anyway. I think that the cellular phone technology, and with repeaters and the like having been installed in so many, many places out there, that they may be able to use the triangulating capability of cellular towers along with GPS, marry the two so that you can have access to location information both indoors and out. Wouldn't that be a great thing?
Thanks, Brian. I think that's a valuable point and a worthwhile one. I guess the one other thing that I would add to this discussion is we're already beginning to see the emergence of some very crude programs that actually do offer some spoken word access in the cellular system. I know that Robert Miller here in Florida has utilized a European cell phone product that actually does allow blind folks to get some rudimentary GPS capability. So that's excellent. Okay, other questions for Brian?
Stanley in Augusta, Georgia again. I'm not exactly sure how to ask this question, but I'll try the best I can. I'm kind of curious, you mentioned earlier in your statements the advantages of GPS. How has organizations approached the availability of GPS? Like, what I'm thinking of, like Voc Rehab in the issue of orientation and mobility, is that something that they're actually supplying for blind people who are trying to get employment? And also, with the advent, like you said, of the cellular technology coming about, do you anticipate that some of these companies now will be to compete, we'll be dropping some of these prices, because without, you know, your average blind person, without your Voc Rehab or some other agency or taking a loan, it's kind of hard to afford some.
Price is a serious issue, and keeping in mind that the same is true for GPS as for virtually all access technology, the majority, and I'm talking over 90% of technology that is out there, this is a Brian Charlson belief, but it's based on 22 years of experience in the field, but that more than 90% of the access technology that's in the hands of blind or visually impaired people was put there by another entity. They were not the buyer of the technology. As a result, we've all become highly dependent on whether rehab will provide it for us, or whether the special education system will provide it for us, and occasionally whether or not our employer or our school might provide it for us more directly. And in those cases, they kind of call the shots. Right now, the rehab agencies I know who are providing GPS to individuals as part of their service to that individual only do so when that individual has a need to be highly mobile, especially in areas that they don't frequent. For example, you might be a VR counselor and you're provided with a driver, but you need to direct them to the houses of new clients as you're going from home to home. There you might be able to justify a GPS unit as an accommodation to your employment. If you are a Randolph Shepherd vendor and you're dealing with a string of vending machines throughout a city or along a major thoroughfare or whatever, you might be able to benefit from GPS as a means of navigating drivers from point to service your machines. So you can make a vocational argument in favor of GPS, and they are being issued in that fashion. I've seen some students get GPS because they're attending a large university where GPS might, in fact, help their mobility around campus, similar to what Paul was saying earlier in the program. So certainly there are some justifications there. I have yet to see a school system provide GPS to a K-12 student. That doesn't mean it isn't happening out there. I just haven't heard of it as of yet. So if we're going to be the primary purchaser, that is end users, then we end users, of course, need the price to come down. We need finance plans to be made available for us to be able to afford it. And we have to acknowledge that a large percentage of people who are blind or visually impaired are not of vocational age. They are 65 years of age and older. They're likely, however, to be cellular phone users. And so I can see us very easily go to a situation where we pay a monthly fee for access to GPS information. Only those who want it or would like to make themselves users of the product would have to pay that surcharge, just like, say, small text messaging and that kind of stuff, where there's an extra monthly fee to give you access to that kind of information. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't be at all unhappy with that scenario. as compared to the lowest price buy-in to GPS being the Street Talk at between $700 and $900, and the highest cost being, I think, the Trekker, because you're buying both the software and the hardware all in one buy. What's the price on that right now, Rachel? Do you have any idea?
It's Anita from Georgia. It's $2,000. I believe it's either $29.95 or something like. I mean, $19.95, around $2,000.
So one way or the other, it's a pretty expensive initial outlay to do this. But if you already own a phone and you were asked to pay $10 to $20 a month additional for the use of GPS, you get two advantages. One, you don't have to buy upgrades. The fact of the matter is the maps aren't owned by you. They're simply used by you on an as-needed basis. You no doubt can collect personal points of interest on these systems, as you already do collect contacts on these systems that augment that for personal use and the like. You could choose to make those public points of interest or private points of interest, and therefore you may benefit from other people adding to the points of interest that the system came with initially. But certainly I would think that a pay-as-you-go, pay-as-you-use kind of scenario would help immensely deal with the issue of the high cost of buy-in.
I wanted to add a couple of things to what Brian said. One is to say that Verizon is already using a kind of a pay-as-you-go model in that they are making their GPS available to sighted users or to non-disabled users for $5 a month to make the additional components that would make it fully functional. It would be interesting to know how much we'd need to do. I don't believe, and this is a Paul Edwards belief, that there are truly enough of us out there who are going to be prepared to make the kind of outlay that GPS requires on our own. And we'll either sell it to Voc Rehab as a viable expenditure, or we simply won't have it. My belief is that there's lots of evidence from the technology field that suggests that while there are certainly some of us who are prepared to put our money where our mouth is where technology is concerned, I'm one of those people, there are an awful lot of folks who are simply not. And even those who are working and who could afford to do it tend to take the position that either technology is not something they want to spend their money on, or not this kind, or they truly believe it's the responsibility of somebody else to provide it.
I'd have to agree with you, Paul, that's been the developed culture, if you will. Whether or not you grew up as part of the blindness system and came to believe that, in fact, it was the obligation of the rehab system and special ed system to provide your technology needs, however they may be defined, or whether or not you're recently blinded and believed somehow that some level of government was going to provide for you in your need, nonetheless, people tend to wait until the system accommodates them by providing this to them free of charge. I think that has pretty much been the case anytime you have to buy it as a lump sum. But I don't see a lot of things out there that we were asked if we might be willing to pay on a pay-as-you-go, pay-as-you-use basis. There are very few things in the blindness system that are of that nature. So I guess I hope that the jury's still out on whether or not we'll buy into something that we pay a monthly fee to access.
Well, I think one example of that pay-as-you-go, I think, is the cell phone. Cell phones for a blind person typically are a lot more expensive than what a sighted person normally pays. Often you go to you can sign a 1 or 2 year contract as a sighted person and get a free phone. You don't have to outlay any kind of expense. As a blind person, if you need a screen reader, talks, or mobile speak, you tend to have not only to have to purchase that software, but also have to purchase a much more expensive receiver or handset than your typical flip phone that is not Symbian or whatever. So I think in that sense, blind people have already shown that they are willing to pay that for that kind of service. The other thing that I've seen, especially in the Trekker listserv, and again, it's obviously it's a small number of people, small representation, I'm sure, but just from reading those messages, I just get the feeling that most of those systems were purchased by the individual, because so many of the VR systems, including here in Georgia, would not even contemplate purchasing a PDA like that with GPS. And finally, my last point I wanted before I lose my turn here, though I lose the floor, is even though we focus today on the pedestrian mode, as Tracker calls it, you know, the ability, the assistance that these GPS systems provide for a blind person to walk from point A to point B and find out what's around them and where the closest restaurant or school, etc., is. I don't want to minimize also the value of the for blind people of the tracker calls the motorized system or car, I don't know what the other systems call it, because even though we don't drive, I have found that this system has put me in a position of a lot more, a greater deal of control, whether I'm taking a taxi and I'm able to direct the driver the way I want to go, or whether I'm taking a bus and I know way ahead of time when my stop is. I don't need to depend on the driver to remember that I asked him to tell me when you get to Fifth Street or whatever. But also, when you're driving with someone, you can truly be a co-pilot and be involved in the whole process of traveling, more so than in the past. So I think that's an important point that I wouldn't want to miss.
Well, from observation, you know, the difference like between a company like Freedom Scientific and GW Micro and the system access people, I guess I don't know that Freedom Scientific was necessarily with blind people. I mean, of course, JAWS is made for blind people, and so is WindowEyes, but of course, System Access is a company made up of blind people to work with blind people doing things from what I've observed as a result of since this came out.
Mr. Brian, in terms of where we are in terms of GPS, are there some final kinds of general thoughts you'd like to share as we begin to approach the end of this first program? I think before I pass it to you, I should say that Brian and I have been talking for a long time about actually doing a series of programs on GPS systems where we would invite representatives from individual companies to come along and do some demonstration, but more importantly to talk about the specific features that they think make their GPS systems pretty good. We have been trying to get all of our ducks in a row and line the folks up, and suddenly decided that it was really just time that we did at least an initial program on GPS to try to establish that there was, in fact, sufficient interest, and now we know there absolutely is. What we will do is try to move ahead with some of that. Also, I'm almost tempted to wait just a little while to see if we get some clearer idea as to whether the voice sense people and or the icon people are really getting relatively close to a GPS system. It is certainly my understanding that the voice sense folks are either actually involved in beta testing or are going to be starting to beta test virtually immediately, so that they're talking about a product being perhaps 2 to 3 months away from being available. So, Brian, some final thoughts, perhaps?
Yeah, I'll tell you a couple of things that we as a blindness community need to be thinking about. One is we need to advocate with the rehab system that GPS is not a fad. This is not yet another laser cane or another MOAP sensor or some other gizmo that one can wave at the universe and through vibrations and echo-sounding glasses and the like be able to tell how far away a given object is. This is an orientation device that both helps you create cognitive maps in advance of going to places and helps you better place yourself in that environment. I think it adds an incredible level of independence to a blind person, and it ought to be considered a reasonable accommodation to just access to the universe. I hope that we're all out there advocating for the agency to say that GPS is not a faddish device. They don't have to worry about getting their fingers burned the way they were in prior gizmos, if you will. Secondly, I think hand in hand with that is we have to encourage all the college prep programs out there, preparing orientation and mobility instructors, rehab counselors, rehab teachers, and the like, to be technically literate, especially the O&M instructors, in the use of GPS. I really applaud the guide dog schools for stepping up to the plate, seeing eye and doing their training, leader dogs, and not only doing training, but providing scholarships for accessing these devices and getting training in at their facility, whether you're a guide dog user or not. That is really amazing that it took guide dog schools to make GPS a mainstream product and not just a gizmo for the technically elite among us. So I would say we need to get on the backs of rehab and education to make sure that we have access to the devices and equally that they're trained, they as professionals are trained in how to teach us to use them effectively alongside our canes and dogs.
Are there some final questions or final thoughts that people would like to put into the system with regard to Brian, who I think has provided us with a really good overview?
This is Leroy. I'd like to thank you all for putting this program together. I've enjoyed listening to it. Hope to hear from more things that y'all come up with in later days.
I have really enjoyed it too, and I'm looking forward to the time when you have some of the manufacturers of these devices on the show. I think, from what I've seen, I think I'd like to have one, but they cost about as much as a computer. I've been getting computers now and then, but I don't know whether I'll get one of these GPSs anytime soon, but they'd be nice to have.
I know that one of the things that has truly been life-changing for GPSs in my life has been that you can set your house as the center and then from that point begin to develop locations really as far away as you want. And as Brian said earlier, there are really thousands of points of interest, particularly in a pretty large city, within 2 or 3 miles. But you can narrow that by searching for restaurants or stores or theaters or entertainment components and a range of other things. And what I would say to you is that I found out more about what's around my neighborhood than I ever knew before. And it was absolutely directly based on using a GPS system in virtual mode. And it has substantially altered the way I live my life. I now order pizza from different places altogether than I would have before. But perhaps more importantly, I now have a much better awareness of where doctor's offices are, of where hospitals are, of how far away the nearest ATM machine is, and a range of things that blind people simply haven't had easy access to in the past. So I think that in addition to the orientation and mobility components, the capacity of GPS systems to enable us to be more fully integrated into our communities can't be ignored either. Ladies and gentlemen, I think this has been an intriguing program where we've merely begun to scratch the surface of GPS technology. I'd like to thank Brian Charlson for being our guest and providing some truly wonderful insights into an emerging technology. I'd like to thank everyone who turned up this evening as guests, and I'd like particularly to encourage those of you who turned up today to come join us again. The broader and more diverse the number and range of people who participate in our programs every week, the more likely we are to develop and implement a sense of who we are that will enable us to attract more listeners to our radio program itself. On behalf of everyone at ACB Radio, good night. And remember, when listening to ACB Radio, you gain insight and vision.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday, 1 hour Universal Time. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each show begins, those online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room service and how it works. An announcement promoting the topic to be discussed will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends list early each week. So we hope you will come and join us Tuesday each week when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. Again, the URL is ourplace.acbradio.org.